WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive, broadcasting from the homeland and the homestead here at WNST in beautiful Towson. Make sure you're setting your dial it to AM 1570 and give us a little preset on the radio here this week as we present the greatest hits of Super Bowl Radio Row as we're locked out of Super Bowl. Is this 57? I mean, Luke, I've been going through all these discs, and they say 38, 41. And the only way I can figure it out is I have to add to 35 or subtract from 47 to figure out what Super Bowl 41 really represented to say, all right, so 41 was 6 plus 01 is 07. So that's a Tom Brady one. I know that. And I'm like, okay, 07, 07. Oh, that was Miami. That wasn't Tom Brady. That was the Peyton Manning one. So I have to, like, I associate the games with Super Bowl Radio Row guests. I associate them with halftime artists. And you know, I guess from time to time, the cast of characters and whether we were in the game or not, or how close we came to being in the game, including the Prince Purple Rain game, where we still had that disappointment to Peyton Manning. But seeing the Bullies of Baltimore come back to life on Sunday night and bringing back my childhood and ghosts of Super Bowl past, 22 years have passed now, I guess, for all of us that remember this. It was really something to see it feted and celebrated. Now, I was at the event down at the Meyerhoff back in May before Goose passed, but it really was it brought a tear to my eye. You know what I mean? I think it was intended to do that, and it was very, very emotional. And obviously, when they shot this thing, Goose dying a couple of weeks later changed the whole trajectory of the documentary, I think.
It did, but I think it's also lovely in a way that it provided this epilogue for him and his family. I mean, they even showed the Hard Knocks footage of he and his wife having their third child, which was, you know, right around that time when Hard Knocks was being, you know, I guess probably right before it was filmed in the summer of 01. But I mean, just what a fun trip down memory lane. And I, you know, this is very unique for me. I've covered the Ravens for a long time now, but in 2000, I was a 17-year-old who was a senior in high school. My generation had grown up without NFL football in the city of Baltimore. So I think what's so beautiful, and it's funny to use the word beautiful to describe the 2000 Ravens when you really think about it, because of, you know, the way they talk trash and they were so brash and they played this nasty defense. And, you know, you look at it today and you'd say, my goodness, they'd be thrown out of the league. Yeah, you know, they'd be penalized every other play. But I think what makes it so unique is, and this is really true of any special team, any championship team, when you really think about it, but I think the 2000 Ravens, because of the generational gap that was created, they meant something a little bit different to everybody. I mean, I think back, and I'm just going to use my own personal experience here for a moment, so humor me, but I think of my grandparents who grew up with the Colts, you know, in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And then as things were going south with Robert Irsay, and I can recall them saying that when it first came out that the Browns were moving to Baltimore, that, you know, they were happy for me. They were happy for my dad, but they were done with the NFL. And there were plenty of folks who adhered to that. And that was their choice. And that was their
prerogative. I'm feeling them on this particular Monday morning.
Yeah. But at the same time, but they said this. But what was funny, Nestor, and maybe not so much in 96 and 97, but as time went on, every time we'd bring up the Ravens, boy, they knew everything about them. You know,
oh, so their world stopped at 1 o'clock. Right. I used to say around here at the beginning, because NST was born in August of 98, right? We would say around here, there's a train wreck every Sunday at 1 o'clock. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and everybody in the community heard the call or the call. Back then, you know, I guess back in 2001 at that time, but it's very, very hard to portray to people who did not live through it, who are not here for it, all of the miracles that the franchise existed, but that the Ravens are established now, you know, a quarter of a century later, right?
Yeah.
Not just not established, but like, no one thought the team in the purple Barney uniforms could even win the Super Bowl, you know, like literally. Well,
yeah. And I, you know, just to finish my thought, you know, there's my grandparents, there's my father who was in his 40s and approaching 50 years of age when the Ravens came to town. And, you know, I can still to this day, you know, my mom talking about how My dad cried that morning, as many Baltimore sports fans, as many Colts fans did in March of
I
1984.
saw my
Even,
father cry twice. That was once. One of the two.
So he grew up, obviously he had so many great memories of the Colts. He was born in 1951, but he had a long gap there. And in the meantime, he had children who he wanted to experience that with. And my dad and I grew up loving the Orioles, but there was no football. I mean, there was the Stallions and there was hope of expansion and all the different stories that we can all remember now vividly all these years later. But for him to then have a second team and then for him to be able to enjoy that with his children. And so I think about that generation. And then, someone like me, I was a few months old when the Colts left town and grew up with the Orioles, and that was it until I was 13 years old. So, and having
But when you were
friends.
12, you never thought there would be a team here because your dad
Right,
was
right. I
probably
mean, there,
resigned to it. You know,
yeah, there was.
we I was on the radio 5 years, and like I didn't really believe that we were getting a team. I believed we would be forever screwed by the NFL, which is
Right.
another missive for this week as well. But it was a miracle to old people.
It
And to
was.
people, I wasn't old. I was in my 20s, right? But
Right.
like I never thought we would get a team. I just didn't think the gods and the powers that be would allow it, like literally.
Yeah, especially when Carolina and Jacksonville got the expansion teams. I mean, that really felt like, even as someone who I was a kid, I didn't understand, the Maryland Stadium Authority and, the lottery and all the different, all
It
the
would
things
be
that went
as
into it. But
unlikely as me saying to you, we're going to get an NHL or an NBA team
yeah, I mean, you
now.
just laugh at it now, right? I mean, it'd be
Yeah.
great. I'd love that for the city, but
It
I
would be
mean,
something for a kid to say, or someone very
sure.
naive would say. It was like old school phone callers for me that would
Right.
say, "Hey, you know how many phone callers called me? Hey, Nash, you think we can get a hockey team?" No, we can't. You know, I can
Right.
give you a
So,
million and one economic reasons, but the answer to could we get a team for your grandparents was, "Luke, I love you. Roxy, I love you. You
don't hold
know,
your
Justin,
breath.
I love
Right.
you." But we're just it. There is no Santa Claus. We're never going to get a team here. So like that, I come from the background of that. So this is still very, and I can put my head around where your grandparents were and where my
Sure.
mother was, you know, at that
Sure,
time.
sure. So I think the commonality there, and even someone who was a teenager and didn't know any better, but when you're thinking about, and I really started remembering in the late 80s, so the late 80s into the mid 90s, okay, the Bucs and the Bengals for a minute and expansion and give Baltimore the ball and the Saints and Dolphins having the exhibition game at on 33rd Street. And but even as I was 12 or 13 years old, it started feeling more and more impossible. So the common thread there between all those generations I just mentioned, and again, that's my experience, but I think a lot of people, feel different ways at different ages. It really did feel impossible. And for just the Ravens themselves in their fifth season, after having watched them in 96 and 97 and 98, and it was better in 99, but still not particularly good. There was such a sense of it being impossible, such a sense for these 2000 Ravens and what made their personality, I think, why people locally took such a liking to them, besides the fact that they were just a kick-ass defense and really good, was there was all along this sense of Baltimore doesn't belong here. The Ravens don't belong here. The fact that they even have a team, let alone the fact that they're in the playoffs and winning in this ugliest sin style where, I mean, did you watch them earlier this year? They went five straight games without scoring a touchdown. So for the Ravens to have the personality that they had, which as the documentary laid out, everyone outside of Baltimore hated for any number of reasons, from Ray Lewis in Atlanta to just the fact that they moved a team out of Cleveland and everything. Yeah, there was such trash talkers. I think there was such a sense of whoever you are, whatever your age was, following this team and then the team itself, that they didn't belong. And the NFL, they weren't a welcome party, right? I mean, the NFL didn't want Baltimore. Paul Tagliabue had made that very obvious a couple years before that. So everything about this just seemed like it was wrong from an outsider's perspective, but boy, it was right for Baltimore. And you just look at this team, and I've said this, I had this conversation not long ago with my brother-in-law, as big Eagles fan. Don't want to rehash that, and people don't care about Philly right now. But I said to him, when the Eagles won 5 years ago, when they won in that impossible way with with Nick Foles and everything that they did, and so many former Ravens, as you and I talked about even recently. I said to him, the Eagles could win five more Super Bowls over the next 20 years and be the next Patriots. Nothing will ever feel like that first one for you. And I got to cover Super Bowl 47 in New Orleans, and I've gotten to know so many of those players and covered them and had this amazing opportunity. That 2012 team, as special as it was, and you wrote a book on both teams. For me personally, and I'm speaking more as Luke Jones, a 17-year-old Baltimore football fan, nothing ever will come close to that. As special as 2012 was, nothing that's happened since or will ever happen in the future will top or match that 2000 Ravens team. And
Dude,
for
you're gonna
my
make me
generation,
cry, man.
yeah,
Like, seriously.
I'm not even trying to be overly mushy about it. That's just how I feel about it. And I
It's
think
true.
for
Hey,
so
dude,
many,
I'm another generation of lifer ahead of you, and I can, being where I am at this point with the franchise and with the city and with the empty seats and just with the lies and the offensive, we're gonna help pick our offense, and then seeing what the covering that other team from the inside with a ring and a book and seeing what Brian Billick was made of and Rod Woodson is made of and Tony Siragusa was made of and Jack Del Rio is made of and Marvin Lewis is made of. And I mean, I know these men. And, from my perspective, I took a powder after the first segment because I could see where it was going when it started with Goose's funeral. And I said to myself, I feel like I should text Goose and say hello to Goose. You know what I mean? See how he's doing. Because he's like alive to me. You know what I mean? He wasn't a cartoon character to me, seeing that stuff with him and Keith Mills with his show by then, his show started with me in 97, 98 when he came in here. And I think the piece itself, and I said this to my wife walking out that night, because my wife and I had a drive back to the county. We had just moved to the county after the actual live event. It was very obvious. I mean, I went down, did the confetti, I said hello to Marvin, but I didn't talk to anybody that night. I fist bumped Jack. It was right about the time Jack was having his problems with being a Trumper, for lack of better expression. Whatever he said about the cops, that was nuts. It was about a week or two before that, because there was mini camp that happened, or training camp in June that happened. And Jack and I were going to grab dinner and this and that. I left and I said to my wife, I'm like, Goose stole the show. Goose stole the show on the stage that night. Goose stole the show. And I thought that, that's the interesting fallout of all of this is there's Hall of Famers up there, coaches, guys that went on, made a lot more money than Goose, were more decorated. Goose was the star of the team. Not in like Ray Lewis was the star of the team, right? But when it comes to personality for it and carrying the torch for it, and I said that to my wife, and I know I said that to you back in June when he died, because we had a couple moments in the aftermath of that. And I was looking for all those tapes and I found him singing those Christmas songs. Tear me up, man. But I thought that that was an interesting legacy for that team. Is that Goose would be the heavy and the spokesperson for it and the most beloved, right? I mean, we love Ray, we love the team. I love Coach Billick. We all have special relationships and like that. But Goose, the minute he walked out, he owned the crowd, he owned the stage that night. And his passing, I'm sure it made it tough for the producers. And at some point, I may have him on. I was working to do that last week when all hell broke loose with the NFL and the Radio Row stuff. But for me, with Goose, having him feed it in that way, it brought some sort of depth and perspective in a way that didn't the night of the event. The night of the event, it was confetti and it was all over again. It was look at what they did and look at what they did. The film was much more sober than that. In the
Yeah, it
end,
was,
in
but
the end.
and it was, and obviously the timing of it, I mean, is just, I mean, irony, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's just, but Siragusa, I mean, Goose just resonated. I mean, I mentioned the theme of everything about this wasn't supposed to happen. I mean, this guy was an undrafted free agent out of Pitt in 1990. I mean, he
With
played
bad
in
knees.
Indianapolis. He played in Indianapolis for years. I mean, that's where he made his hay as an NFL player. And then he winds up in Baltimore and becomes this, late 90s version of Art Donovan. And I mean, there was just, there was a charm to that. I mean, not that you would say he's this charming individual overall. I mean, he's rough around the edges and could be abrasive and all that, but
for
boy, I mean,
real,
he just,
for real,
yeah.
in real life,
I
for
mean,
real.
he really fit. He fit the personality of the city, the fan base, and that football team at that point in time. And I mean, he wasn't alone, and he'd be the first to tell you that. But yeah, he had a way of, as he did on that night, and as he did in this documentary, even without the what was clearly a greater emphasis on him, giving the tragedy of him passing away shortly after the reunion. But it just, I mean, he just he fit. And again, this goes back to, as much as all of this wasn't supposed to happen in so many different ways, I mean, here's this loud, obnoxious, big guy, Jersey native, who said, "Why not? Why can't we be here?" And so many other guys on that team that just
He came out to
epitomized
the
that.
van and drank beer with us
Yeah.
and threw beer cans at Redskins fans in the parking lot. Like, listen, like, I literally, this happened for real. I mean, I'll never forget him putting his meat hook around me in Denver out at Mile High
Yeah.
Stadium and telling me he loved me after he got conked in the head that day, had a concussion. So Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him anywhere but Radio Row this week. We're going to have a whole lot of best of here this week and a whole lot of memories. And, you and I have had a chance to sit down with Stokely and John Ogden. You were not a part of the sit down I had with Trent Dilfer in 2006 in Detroit. All of these pieces are going to air this week. They're going to appear at Baltimore Positive this week. I have a 2009 piece, extended piece, 25 minutes with Ray Lewis in Tampa, where the subject was him leaving the franchise. So we were in the middle of this with Lamar at this point. And there's actually a point where we asked Joe Montana what Ray Lewis should do. And Joe, because he went to Kansas City famously at the end of his career, he said, "I would tell Ray to go." So I'm airing stuff this week that never would have made it on the air had we been in Glendale and Phoenix this week. But we're having our own issues here this week. But part of this for you and I is, Goose sat down with me on Radio Row in Jacksonville. He sat down with me on Radio Row in Phoenix at different points. Shannon Sharp sat down with me every year. So I have all of these pieces, Marvin, all of these pieces put together from that team. And I'm so proud of that. And I'm so emotionally attached to that team and always will be. And in a way that you put it much more eloquently than I can, as Barry White once sang, my first, my last, my everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, again, taking nothing away from the 2012 team that had such a great story itself. But it's especially for me, because,
and a bigger parade, as I told Joe Flacco, which is
no
true.
Question, no question. But for me, someone my age, and I'm not making this about me, but my generation, you got to remember, again, I was born in October of 83. I was born literally 2 weeks before the Orioles last won the World Series. I'm 39 years old now. That's how long it's been for the Orioles. So did not grow up with those glory days, just grew up with the stories of it. And I cherish those stories, but it's not the same as experiencing it yourself. So the Ravens in 2000, and then the Terps in 2002, because I grew up, a Maryland basketball fan as well. Not as lucrative as the NFL and baseball, but certainly appreciate that. But that chance to celebrate, and you mentioned it with Tony Siragusa, but just think about, for everyone, it's as much as you love the team, and this is again me getting a little more philosophical as I get older, it's really about who you experience these games with. It going to your father, go with your father or your mother or your grandpa or your grandma or your aunt or your uncle to 33rd Street or Camden Yards, or watching the Colts, watching the Ravens, I mean, whatever. Whatever your age is, whenever you grew up, I mean, when you see that, and Goose is just, the most recent, member of that team that we've lost. There have been others and other members of the organization. But, I thought about my dad, throughout that. I could think about every single significant moment. My one complaint of the 30 for 30, and they did a fantastic job. I would have liked a few minutes spent on the week 2 win over Jacksonville. As I did my greatest regular season moments in Ravens history a couple years ago during the pandemic. And that was number one for me because of what that meant symbolically, beating Jacksonville. To me, that was the moment the Ravens arrived as a legitimate NFL team.
By the way, it was anyway, the day we went on the radio the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've been on the radio continuously as right. WNST from September 10th of 2000, literally
go.
The day after. So, yeah.
There you go. But that you know, again, a minor complaint, that constructive criticism there, just my personal opinion. I think that moment was that significant.
It changed the franchise.
Yeah, but it was different because it went against the narrative of the Ravens being dominant defensively because they gave up 36 points that day, you know, which was strange. But every significant moment from, you know, I think of Dilfer throwing the pick six late in the Tennessee game in the regular season and then coming back, and every moment of the playoffs. I mean, you know, I have these memories of where I was, what we had for the game spread that day, sitting in the living room, what we had to eat, all of that. I mean, I was only 17, so I wasn't drinking beer, but I can tell you what beer my dad was drinking that day. And I mean, you just, all those different memories just come
that Charger back. Game blows me away because I had a really special experience that night.
Yeah.
You know, when they made the playoffs, mm-hmm. and like it was raining and cold, and I went to Mother's that night after the game, and like I didn't even live downtown, but it was one of those really special nights in the way that, look, beating Denver, special. When
sure.
Ray Lewis caught the ball, I was with Kevin Eck in the upper deck in Nashville, jumping up and down. In Oakland, I was in the box with the Mother's group. I talk about it all the time. I was on the field. When Sarah Goose had the Mickey Mouse shirt on and they were celebrating the AFC trophy, I was taking pictures next to the photographer that shot that. So much of it, I kept stopping the thing and saying to my wife, man, I was on the field for that.
Yeah.
When Patrick Johnson caught that touchdown in Nashville, there's a picture of me ducking as he caught the pass. I have a picture of that. I was wearing, and you know this is a period piece, right? I was wearing the purple camouflage pants. How about that?
There you go.
Right? Yeah.
My dad owned a pair of those. So
of course he did.
Lots of people did it. And the ones you said they didn't, they lied, right? I mean, everyone had them back.
They were our 90s. Zubaz.
Yeah, exactly. It was on the heels of Bills fans wearing those for half a decade. So, I mean, it was just every moment about that. And that's what just made this so fun. I think we all think back to the obvious memories, you know, the obvious moments, but, you know, even the more subtle ones. I mean, I think of some of the games I went to that year. I went to the game down at FedEx Field where Goose talked about how he was backed up, which I had not heard that story before. So I thought that
all
was pretty
I remember
funny.
Stephen Davis stiff arming Rod Woods in the Hall of Famer running him over. That's all I remember.
I lost a bet with a girl that I went to that game with from my high school. And I had to wear a Champ Bailey jersey to school the next day, which everyone at my high school knew I was the biggest Ravens fan around. And boy, that was something. That was a scene.
I've never heard this story. I'm getting deep, dark secrets.
I honestly hadn't even really thought
How
about
have
it.
How I spent 15 radio rows and nights in hotel rooms and beer and like, and I've never heard that story from you.
Even my, that was my senior year of high school, and I was on the football team. Even my football coach caught wind of that and heard, Luke, I heard you were wearing a Champ Bailey jersey today. I was like, Coach, I don't want to talk about it.
That's why you don't make those kind of bets. I lost a bet with Travis Taylor over the Terps Florida game. I had to wear his helmet.
Yeah.
At the barn. I had to wear a Florida Gator helmet. So.
Right. So I mean, it's just, but all these, you know, it's the big memories, but it's also the little memories. And this is, again, this is true throughout your life as a sports fan. But for those championship teams specifically, for this to come to life, for them to have, you know, the event that they did and to use so much of that footage and so many of these interviews with so many of the key players. I mean, it's just, it's fun. It brings it to life. And, you know, what's crazy about it, you know, as we were talking about the generations of, you know, our parents and grandparents to, you know, me, now I think about, and I was seeing this even on Twitter and I was tweeting a little bit I didn't want to tweet too much, but I was tweeting a few times, you know, made a shout out to Rob Burnett, who should have made the Pro Bowl that year. That's how great he was and how big of a part he was of that.
I have a picture of him. We gave him a grass skirt out at the barn.
He was terrific that year. Go back and, I mean, the sacks, the forced fumbles, fumble recoveries, quarterback hits.
He was dominant.
Yeah, he really was. And by the way, he was a first team all pro that year. So at least the Associated Press gave him the nod, even if the Pro Bowl did not. But, you know, I think what was neat about seeing this on Twitter was, when you think about it, this was 23 years ago now. There are even some prominent Ravens fans, and when I say prominent Ravens fans, younger fans who just have a following, right? They're, the X's and O's film junkie types, or just super fans or whatever. Seeing some of them make mention of, they weren't alive when the Ravens won that Super Bowl in 2000. They're only 20 or 21, or maybe they're 18, and right, and just getting to college. I mean, it is crazy to think about that, and that's why this is so neat. As much as us old guys talk to the younger generation and say, "Oh, they don't make them like they used to," and "Oh, okay, the 2022 Ravens defense was good, but they were no 2000 group," and there's a reason why they. Legally, they couldn't be that kind of group. But for them to get a chance to kind of see that come to life in a way different than just watching, the old games on YouTube or whatever, it's pretty special. So, I mean, really, really enjoyed that trip through memory, down memory lane for a 2 hour stretch. And thought it was funny, even though Trent Dilfer talking about the playbook being stolen. I mean, that wasn't brand new, but him mentioning that Greg Williams literally admitted it to him at some point in time, after the fact. It's pretty incredible and pretty nice bragging rights when you think about it, that you could say, "You guys stole our playbook and we still beat you." I mean, that's pretty good right there when you think about it. And one thing I'll say, and I've said this before, I'll continue to say it because I don't want it to be forgotten. Ravens Titans was truly Ravens Steelers before Ravens Steelers became Ravens Steelers. I mean, it was that bitter. Teams hated each other, and it was so evident. And as much as Raven Steelers has even become about mutual respect, and that's fine, I mean, I get it, but it was so bitter, and that was just such a fun rivalry. And I'll continue to say it was a bummer that when they did realignment in 2002 that they broke up the Ravens and the Titans, because it would have been fun to see if that had some of the same staying power. And it's not as though they haven't renewed it on a couple occasions, especially here recently, but just to see that, and the clip of Billick in the post-game locker room and turning the cameras off and bleep the Titans, I mean, that's some good stuff. And I mean, you don't see very much of that today, and that's why I've kind of chuckled here over the last month or so, where people have taken such exception to the Bengals and they're trash talking and how brash they've been and all of that. And it's just like, boy, you look at them compared to what the Ravens were 20 plus years ago. I mean, they're choir boys. So it really is a reminder of how much things have changed, and that's okay. You don't want to live into the past, but it is okay to go back and remember. And that's what Sunday night gave us an opportunity to do, and it was a heck of a lot of fun.
Coach Billick says, once you try to win a Super Bowl, they'll try to take it away from you. But, they'll try, and they'll try. But 22 years later, it's still, they're making documentaries about that team that I wrote in a book back 6 weeks after they had won, that they would be considered the greatest defense in the history of the game. And I think time now, a quarter of a century, that even Troy Polamalu and Steelers would agree. And you could say, the 70s Steelers and the Steel Curtain, Purple People Eaters, wherever you want. But statistically, we're a quarter of a century out. And as Brian Billick pointed out in the documentary, I mean, 10 points a game, 10 points a game over 16 games, 17 games, eventually it'll be 18 games, that they'll have to amortize that. It doesn't feel realistic in the modern game that that's ever going to be topped. And because of that, it's been 22 years, and I don't think there's. If you gave me Vegas odds right now on the, on the app, and we could get our $200 free and play the game, the odds that somebody will ever beat that, probably not good. Certainly not good this year or any year.
Yeah, I mean, the shutouts, the fact that they gave up what, a little over 10 points per game. I mean, it's extraordinary. And even, and you know me, I'll nerd it up here for a moment. I know, if there's been a statistical critique of what the Ravens did in 2000 in the regular season, it fairly pointed out they didn't exactly face a murderer's row of opposing quarterbacks that year, but. Even, DVOA and Football
Don't
Outsiders and
talk
Aaron.
bad about Spurgeon Win like
Oh,
that.
let me be clear. Let me finish. What they did in the postseason, absolutely remarkable. I mean, it's crazy because you knew it, and it's not surprising. But when you heard Ray Lewis go down the possession chart for the Giants in the Super Bowl, punt, 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 interception, punt, just going down the entire list. And we know, I mean, it was a shutout other than Ron Dixon's kick return for the touchdown in the second half. But I mean, it's astonishing what they did on that stage. And for as much as we celebrate, and rightfully so, what Joe Flacco did as a quarterback in the 2012 postseason, what the Ravens defense, as great as they were in the regular season, to be that much greater in the postseason was just remarkable. I mean, they even talked about it in that divisional game against Tennessee. Hey, Titans put together a heck of an opening drive. They marched right down the field, and Eddie George ran on them even, and they did some boots with Steve McNair and whatnot. But other than that, I mean, no one did anything against them of consequence, offensively. I mean, you can
Hall
think
of
of it.
Famer Troy Aikman,
Yeah.
nada.
Yeah.
How about that?
I mean, it's just, but it's just, it really, what a remarkable group. I mean, the personalities, shine through, and obviously it was great to see some of the Hard Knocks stuff. How about the fact they brought Tim Johnson back to do the Shannon Sharp impersonation at the event, which I had not heard that, or if I had, I'd forgotten it. I mean, that's cool, but I mean, it's not like he became a notable player for them or anything. He was just, a camp guy as part of the talent show. But the personalities. But boy, and this is where I made the comparison to the Bengals. The Ravens backed it up. They went on and they won it all, and they won it all in emphatic fashion. And I think what was so fun about that run, and I even threw it out there on Twitter, after the Ravens beat the Titans in the divisional round, regardless of what CBS or ESPN or whoever was saying as far as breaking down that Ravens Raiders game, I don't think there was, other than just the fans who always want to worry about something, I don't think there was a single Ravens fan who actually thought they weren't going to win that game in Oakland. I think everyone thought from the moment Ray Lewis takes the ball away from Eddie George, and they beat the
Oh,
Titans,
I said we're going to the Super Bowl. It's the
you
first thing I
knew they
said
were
to Kevin
going to that
Hooker right
Super
that
Bowl. And it's
moment.
just going to be a
Yes.
matter. Yeah, it's just going to be a matter of who do they play, the Giants or Minnesota? I mean, that's really what, that's what it came down to at that point. For me, I mean, I always think back to, for me, Ray Lewis taking the ball away from Eddie George was just the exclamation point. For me, the moment I knew was Anthony Mitchell, who 98% of Ravens fans had no idea who he was. He was backup safety who played special teams. He returns the block field goal for the touchdown. That was the moment for me that I vividly remember saying to my dad at the time, sitting in our living room, "We're winning the Super Bowl this year." I mean, that's how confident I was as a 17-year-old Ravens fan who seeing my first playoff games, for my team, my hometown team, and that's how confident I was. And it was just going to be a matter of how they did it. I mean, I thought it was cute to hear the talking heads leading up to the AFC Championship game talking about the Raiders' vaunted running game that they were going to be able to run against the Ravens. It's like, get out of here with that. If you're going to do anything against the Ravens, you might complete a pass or two here or there, spread them out, dink and dunk, maybe get someone to miss a tackle, but you didn't run on that group at all. I mean, that's where, go back to the analytics I was mentioning, that run defense, boy, I mean, it's as historically dominant as anything you'll see in the history of the NFL. That, I mean, what they gave up, I think it was 2.8 yards per carry that season. I mean, that's silly. I mean, that is absolutely silly.
You know what's
So,
crazy is I was going through all this Radio Row stuff and the Super Bowl 35 Radio Row. I had the radio station, but I was syndicated nationally at that time. I was syndicated for two Super Bowls. That was one of them. And so I was down there working for Sporting News Radio on a big set where I just found the tapes. And the tapes they gave me were VHS because they taped 6 hours. The show was 4 hours long. So I have Baldy TSN. Super Bowl XXX, V Tampa Thursday, Friday. And I went through the segments and I found Bonnie Bernstein, who I had still have a great crush on. And I love Bonnie. And I've just always loved doing radio with Bonnie when she's been on my show and whatnot back in the day. But she was a big shot. I mean, she was doing Super Bowl on the broadcast, the whole deal, right? She was in the movie. with Billick asking him about the first half. He said, anything I say to you is going to be up on that screen in a minute. And he said that to Bonnie. So 2 weeks later, Bonnie's with me and Baldinger doing the national show. We held her two segments, but she's from Jersey and grew up a Giants fan. And obviously is a Terp, right? But I went after her real good because she said she was doing the Giants. And I think I said to her five times in interview, what's it going to be like being in the losing locker room? What's that going to be like for you? And, I said that several times. So you're going to hear that this week. So there will be a little serendipity in all of this madness with WNST and my life's work being boxed out of Radio Row this week for the first time in 27 years. Luke, it will be on the set and around and ready for all things baseball and spring training. And whenever John Angelos opens the books, Luke, I hope that I'm anointed the WNST representative. There's all lying their asses off, aren't they? But we still have the purple afterglow of Super Bowl 35 and the memories and thoughts of Goose and watching the bullies of Baltimore. And I'll be presenting a whole bunch of conversations in and around that, some epic sort of conversations from that week. Luke, so I've gone through the list of the guests that I actually have found, and there's 232 pieces, I think, that are going to air this week. The ones I can't find are the ones that really piss me off, and you know this, right? Because you know me in the real world. So I think I have found The Rock from Houston, 2004. I have no idea where John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite. He sat down with me with the bobblehead. We did a whole segment with the bobblehead in 2006 in Detroit. I have pictures of me with Shannon Sharp and Lennox Lewis together when Lennox Lewis was like the champion in Detroit, like in 06. And they did 15 minutes on the set with me together. I can't find the tape. David Copperfield did the show with me, made the prediction, Ravens Super Bowl week on the set. Jennifer Garner, can't find that interview. Kevin Green joined me at the Super Bowl 2002, gave me a hard time about being a Raven fan when he was a Steeler. I've lost my Jerry Glanville conversation from Miami 1999. But I am mixing down Vanilla Ice, Christian Okoye, a double shot of Rod Woodson and Michael Haynes, two Hall of Famers at the same time. That was kind of fun. I got to read my own writing. Tony Baselli, who has since joined the Hall of Fame, the great Stacy Keebler, one-time WNST intern Stacy Keebler, and also sold Get Nasty t-shirts at Whiskey Joe's on Super Bowl Sunday. So there's another 35 reference for you with Keebler because she was my intern then. She was actually Miss Hancock then, but it's a long story. And then the Matt Burke, Torrey Smith interview that you and I did a couple years ago. So I'm finding lost pieces of all sorts of things across all sorts of spectrum. So you know what you're going to have to do, Luke, for your mama and your sister and your brother who weren't around before 2009 and I was already 14 Super Bowls deep in? They can go back and hear all the remnants of all these great conversations with Yanni in 2004 or Joe Montana in 2009 or Jerome Bettis in 2003 when he was spinning my Super Bowl ring and wanting and hoping and then admitting in the next segment that he never did it. So you'll have a chance to hear all of that all week long here as we present Best of Super Bowl Radio Row. How was that for a promo? Was that good?
That was good. That was good. I felt it. Absolutely.
Well, you and me and Diamond Dallas Page, what's your favorite Radio Row interview that you've done? Because you've been a part of 200 of them, 300 of them.
Yeah, boy. Putting me on the spot. I mean, that one was anything we've done with pro wrestlers.
It's always the ones you don't get. You're pissed about Charlotte Flair, and I'm still pissed about the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just you take it for granted when you're there because it's a long week and it's a lot. There's a lot going on, but when you start to count up the number of Hall of Famers you and I have had an opportunity to talk to, and you many more than me, having done it longer than me. That's pretty cool. When you think about it, and it's obviously it resonates more when it's someone Baltimore, that's sitting down with us, but
I got to find Joe DeLamelaire because he taught me how to say his name.
There you go.
Before he
there
went into the Hall of Fame. You're mentioning Hall of Famers. Like we had Andre Tippett. We had John Randall. We've had Orlando Pace. I mean, I'm just Derek Brooks sat down with us. Barry Sanders. That's another missing one. 2006, Barry Sanders, who never talked famously, sat down and was the nicest guy in the world to me in Detroit, So, I've had him on a couple of times. I found pictures of me and Lynn Swann. I don't remember talking to Lynn Swann, but I did. I have pictures of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you another one. And this one's kind of low key because it's after the fact. How many years did we talk to Jerry Kramer about finally, his Hall of Fame credentials, and then he finally gets in? And you think about that. I mean, and every town has their guy, right? In some sport who hasn't made it to the Hall of Fame that
Yeah, we've got Art
everyone's rooting
Modell.
for. Yeah, I mean, we'll be talking about Marshall Yanda until he gets in. Well, exactly. I mean, we'll just,
Suggs
whoever.
too.
Yeah, Suggs. I mean, absolutely. Well, until Justin Tucker gets in, all that. But every town has one or two guys, and especially when it's someone who it's been a long time for. We sat down with Jerry Kramer, and I feel like I'm sure I probably asked him about the Hall of Fame at least once, if not a couple different years. And then for him to finally get the nod, and I don't think we've talked to him since then. It was just a few years ago when he was inducted, so I don't think we had a chance to interview him after the fact, but. That's pretty neat when you really think about that, and it's crazy and it's rapid fire sometimes, but the number of Hall of Famers you get a chance to talk to and athletes from other sports, all of that. I mean, it's tough. I'd have to really sit down. Frankly, I would need a list to go through
Well, I'm going
and
to provide that list for you,
yeah,
Baltimore Positive, this week. How
there you
about that?
go. Exactly. So my that was a long explanation for saying I don't really know, but
So
there've
my
certainly been some
favorite
great ones.
interview was Mary Lou Retton.
Okay.
Like, I would
Yeah.
just say that I really loved that time with her. It was fun. She was so cool. She was into it. She was digging it. And I think that the work we did with Billy Cundiff,
That was good, right?
was amazing. I mean,
Yeah.
Billy Cundiff came and sat and talked to us, just sat down with us for a while.
Yeah.
And I thought you were great with Anquan Boldin in Miami a couple of years. I mean, look, I can go through. I'm
Sure.
plugging now. I'm literally just plugging. But if you put our radio station on this week and you're hearing this, you're gonna hear some shit. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you're gonna
No
hear
doubt.
stuff that you haven't heard, that conversations you may have recollected from 2004 because you were in the car the day I had The Rock on, or the day I had Mike Ditka on, or the day Deion Sanders sat down with me in 2004. It's amazing, the body of work. And I want to present it for people this week, in a week when we have been unceremoniously locked out, and I'll deal with that in due time. But in the meantime, it's Super Bowl week, and I want people to come to the station and come to the website and have a good experience and experience the depth of the work we've done. And it's significant, and been doing it ever since Brian Billick won the Super Bowl and Ray Lewis won the Super Bowl and Tony Siragusa. So, and we're still here doing it. Let's see, 35, it's 50, it's 22 years later, right? So I got to do the math on Super Bowl XX. We're into the L's now. There's no X's anymore. I always write Super Bowl X and then I look up, I'm like, shit, X's have been gone for almost 8 years now. So we're LVII. Did you know that?
Yeah, and this is the 10-year anniversary, and obviously this past Friday was the 10th anniversary of Super Bowl 47. So you mentioned, I mean, I'm the same way. Whatever the context is of Super Bowl 35 and 47, and I'd even go back to Super Bowl 25, which was Giants Bills, and Whitney Houston doing her thing, and Scott Norwood missing the field goal at the end. But that's for me, that's probably the first Super Bowl that I really have a strong memory of. I can remember the 49ers, bits and pieces of it the year before, but that Bills Giants Super Bowl, that was my first Super Bowl that I really remember as what a 7-year-old at the time. So,
My first
that
Super Bowl that I remember were the Dolphins.
yeah. So, I mean,
The
it's
undefeated Dolphins in 72, 73, 74, the Colts getting out of the way and Marty Dommers. I've been through that, but yeah, man, it's been a lot of Super Bowl Sundays. So we'll be
crazy.
taking this one
It's
off this
crazy.
week, but we'll have a good time around here. And folks tuning in will hear the history of the game, really, literally. I think that's something we
No question
present.
about it. Lot,
Yeah.
lots of great conversations, and I mean, we'll watch the game just like everyone else come this coming Sunday, but plenty to look back on, and lots of great Ravens conversations mixed in there.
And maybe even an offensive coordinator before it's all over with. Luke Jones is at Baltimore.
At
Luke,
some point.
it's going to happen. The purple plumes of smoke are going to be flying out when this happens. All of our WNST coverage and our crab cake tour brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Window Nation. Reminder again, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. It's a simple deal, but you get 2 years free financing. They had five for a while. It's two right now. Still a great deal. Take advantage of it. Call 866-90-NATION. For all of our sponsors and the people that have put us on the road for 28 years doing Super Bowls. Please accept my apologies that I'm not there this week. It is not my lack of effort or my lack of integrity or my lack of wanting to be out there and having a flight and having rooms and watching with my nose pressed up to the glass like a gall dang amateur. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Super Bowl 35, because it's fun and we won. Stay with us.